Hi, this is Michelle Rousseau.
And Suzanne Rousseau.
And you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
You're the bomb.
Hey, Bomb Squad, you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. Let's thank our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. Get cracking at hansenbrookfarm.com. Some housekeeping. We are finishing the next issue of Cherry Bomb magazine. If you are not a subscriber, head over to cherrybomb.com and subscribe. You get 2 issues per year and help support projects like Radio Cherry Bomb. Speaking of Radio Cherry Bomb, next week we are kicking off our Food for Thought tour presented by Kerrygold. We'll be visiting Nantucket, Baltimore, Portland, Maine, Savannah, Phoenix, and San Diego. We are covering a lot of ground. You can check out cherrybomb.com for dates, tickets, and more details. We'd love to see you on our tour. What else do we have to tell you? The Food Waste Fair 2019 is taking place in Brooklyn on Thursday, May 23rd. It's coming up soon. Join the Cherry Bomb team and other mindful folks to learn more about composting, zero waste kitchens, and sustainable restaurants. Visit foodwastefair.nyc for tickets and more information. I can't wait for you to listen to today's interview because it covers my favorite subject, ice cream. Today's guest is Natasha Case, the founder and CEO of Cool House, the brand that's changing the ice cream world one scoop at a time. Natasha not only stopped by Cherry Bomb HQ, but she brought some ice cream sandwiches and her new dairy-free flavors, which are excellent. We love Natasha for putting great ice cream into the world and for being a fearless business leader. Before I speak with Natasha, let's hear a word from our sponsor. Hansenbrook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Suzanne Vizethan is a mother hen. She's the chef and owner of Buttermilk Kitchen in Atlanta. Curious how Chef Suzanne makes her French toast with caramelized bananas? The ingredients include whole milk, ciabatta bread, and some Hansenbrook Farm eggs to make each slice as fluffy as can be. You can find Chef Suzanne's delicious egg-centric recipes and videos on hansenbrookfarm.com. If you're looking for Hansenbrook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs, you can find them at Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country. Here's my conversation with Natasha Case of Cool House. All right, so I want you to drop some stats for us because you have built Cool House into such an impressive business. So tell us the state of the state today.
Yeah, Cool House is growing so much. It's really exciting. So this year we're in about 7,500 doors, and that's everything from, you know, the Whole Foods, where we just launched our dairy-free sandwiches, which I'm super excited about, to a Wegmans, Fresh Direct, your local bodega, often here in New York, to like the Kroger's, Publix, Safeway. We are international too, Cayman Islands, Caribbean, Asia, Middle East. The footprint has grown a lot. We're going to do probably about 17, 18 million in sales this year. So we're super excited about that with about 35 SKUs, pint sandwiches and bars, expecting to sell multiple millions of the sandwiches.
What is your goal?
I would say I really believe that Cool House could be the ice cream brand of the millennial generation, like that household brand that is accessible and that you can get in a lot of places, but is of phenomenal quality and has a really authentic and unique story behind it. And is the women founded and led is representing a huge change in how brands are built and the kind of people behind them.
Yeah, let's talk about that because you now have all your products are stamped with
yes.
a W. And when people see that, what is that all about?
So it's amazing. We we started to incorporate that into the branding because we were seeing that we're really becoming the biggest women founded and led ice cream brand at grocery. And we said, we really need to share this more in a way that's clearer with our fans, because you may think it's the obvious thing about your brand, the most obvious thing, but then it takes a lot for people to really get the information. So we need to make this clearer. We went and we got the certification, which is kind of a funny process. Like they like come and like audit you at like your office. Like, you're going to follow me to the bathroom, like, you know?
So it's an organization that does this.
There's several. Yes, okay. There's several. And so we went through one of them and we kind of moved it to the front of the packaging. And then that's been there for a couple of years. And that is the thing that more than anything else, as far as the call outs, like really is the biggest touch point for people on social. They're coming to say like, oh, I didn't know Cool House is women owned. I want to support this. Or they kind of like showcase that, like when they post about us. Recently, we went through a round of like our first ever like focus groups, which is like a fascinating Ooh. Experience. That's like,
I've done those before yeah. for other people I've worked for.
Okay.
It's
yeah.
It's never what you think it's yes. going to be ever, ever.
There's so many surprises in all directions. And it's like such a fascinating thing yeah. to sit
you
behind
work
that
so hard
mirror.
On building this company and, yeah. and shaping it. And you know what it stands for. And then when you talk to people outside the company, you're like, yeah. are we talking about the same brand?
Yeah, no, there's so many surprises. And sometimes people take things so much farther than you even did. Like, we were asking them about the women founded and led seal. And I just kind of thought like, oh, that's cool for them to know they're going to see that that's something different. Well, the specifics that their mind goes to, like, they were like, well, if it's women founded and led, she probably has a family. And I'm not only supporting her, but I'm supporting her family. I mean, in this case happens to be true, but like total assumption. Or she's going to make flavors that I like better because she understands me. She's more thoughtful about the creation of the flavors and the brand and what it stands for, or the sustainability element. Like all these things that come into people's heads that are like, it's like there's work to do in terms of making it resonate more and like kind of tapping into that. But the fact that people are already going there is like amazing, actually. So
for you, why is that important that people know this company is women founded?
Well, one, I think that it's the exception, not the rule. And so people need to see that change is happening and they need to see that it's possible for them too. You know, if someone, it's so much easier to like become the change that you can see. So making sure that it's known for, you know, our generation, for the next generation, for an older generation, whoever it may be that feels like inspired by the fact that the dial is moving. I definitely think it is a different perspective in terms of flavor development. The thoughtfulness is, I think there's some meaning behind that. I do find with female entrepreneurs, there's just a very deep level of consideration and carefulness in the details. And I think like, you know, you do want to make that known so that people can be aware kind of, you know, a different level that might be going into this product.
It's so interesting. You said about being the change. I was watching, I'm going to get back to Cool House and you're going to be surprised how I do this.
I love it.
But I was watching Beyonce's Homecoming this weekend, like the rest of the planet. She had quotes in between some of the footage, and she had a quote from Marion Wright Edelman, who's the founder of the Children's Defense Fund. But she had given, I think she might have been valedictorian of her college, and there was a quote from her valedictorian speech, and she said, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And I was like, aha, that's where it's from. And guess what year it was from?
When?
1959.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, we're still talking about representation. I mean, well,
I know,
you know, we've been talking about representation for a very long time, but Beyonce,
yeah,
concert film was filmed at Coachella.
Yes. Oh, beautiful. Well played. Great segue.
And Cool House kind of took off.
Yeah.
At Coachella. Like, I know that's a big part of your early story.
Totally. Basically, almost exactly 10 years ago.
So now we're going to go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
So tell us.
Time travel.
God, where do we even start? So tell us about the Coachella story. So you roll up at Coachella.
Yes.
And it
well,
went well.
Even getting there, quite a challenge. So basically, we had the idea for elevating ice cream, in particular ice cream sandwiches, to do something more that represented our generation's point of view, and especially, I think, women's point of view. We wanted to elevate ice cream, especially ice cream sandwiches, though. They had been particularly bastardized, and I think novelties is a whole other game, and we can get into like some of the thoughts on that. But, and So we wanted to do this. We had bought a beat up postal van that kind of was masquerading as an ice cream truck. It was $2,500 and we were really just paying for the chrome rims because there was no engine. The doors, windows didn't operate, but that's what we could afford. We didn't have money for a scoop shop. We didn't understand grocery. So that was going to be it. And then we needed a big place to, you know, launch at. So we had both been to Coachella for a few years and we begged and begged them to let us sell there. We were the first food truck to go to Coachella. So they had no like protocol for it. They're like, great. Okay. You can go in the campground. Like, just stay away from us. Like, you know, we don't want to hear anything from you. We're like, great. We'll accept it. So the morning of Coachella comes around and remember the truck has no engine. We had figured out that if we joined AAA Platinum, we got one free 200 mile tow. And we pretend the truck broke down, even though it never drove.
That is an insane story.
Yeah. It's funny, like, thinking of it, like, it seemed like such a normal, like, the way we solved the problem. This is how we're getting there. It didn't even seem like a crazy thing to do.
How did you know how much quantity to bring?
Yeah.
All of that?
Well, we didn't. We way overestimated. So better that way around. Like, I don't think we understood, like, 100,000 people at Coachella. Well, how many people are in the campground and then how many people actually are going to buy dessert? It's usually 10% of, like, a captive audience are going to buy dessert if there's no other competition. So we had way more than we needed, but worked out because we actually went back for Stagecoach 1 or 2 weeks after. There was no Coachella weekend too back then.
So that gave you enough. So tell me what happened
yes,
after that.
So yes, the sales was some proof of concept, but really the thing that I think made it like, we have to do this and this is going to go to the next level is actually a friend of mine was writing for Curbed at the time. And he said, you know, if it goes well, send me a logo and a description and I'll do a little piece on Cool House. I said, great. Like, it seemed like it went well enough. Like, I'm going to, you know, send him the information. And he wrote this article. It was like, not even very nice. It was like, if you're really bored and like you want to do something weird and check out this weird truck, like maybe think about it. It's called Cool House. It was like, thanks, Dan,
oh, geez, thanks
for that. But it went viral. It went from there to Apartment Therapy, to Jwell, to LA Times, Angelino. I had all these editors calling me on the way home. And meanwhile, Freya, her phone had died the last day of Coachella. She charges it on the way home. We had like, you know, basically like booked like the Twitter handle. And she had set like an email alert for each new follower because when you have 10, you know, it doesn't matter. But she was getting emails every couple seconds, literally. And she called me. She's like, I think we've been hacked and we need to shut this down. I was like, no, that's real. Like,
wow.
Something is happening.
Very cool. So and Freya being your co-founder and your life
yes,
partner.
Yes, exactly. Sorry. Yes. The other founder of Cool House, my life partner, my wife, the first lady of Cool House now, as I like to call her. So that was really, I think, the beyond like, okay, the basic infrastructure was in place. It shows you how valuable having a story to tell and a connection with media and journalism and journalists who want to share it is so huge for your brand, especially early on. Basically, by the time we got back, it was like, this is happening. This is taking off. We had people, you know, calling in to try to book the truck. And that was really like, we're doing this.
So when Cool House, I mean, I remember when Cool House launched because there was just nothing like it.
Yeah.
You were inspired by architecture and it was like such a kooky story. You're like, wait a second. It's like architecture inspired ice cream. Like you couldn't help but pay attention. So let's go back because you studied architecture.
Yes.
Not ice cream.
That's true. From architect to ice cream lady. Totally normal.
So you're in school studying architecture. You get your first job. What was your first big gig?
So my first real job out of grad school was Disney Imagineering, which was, it's, I think like on like the dream job scale, like it's up there, like it's an incredible place to work.
I've read a lot about Imagineers, but for the yes. folks who haven't, tell yes. them what that means.
So Disney Imagineering, they're most famous for like ride design at the theme parks, but it's also the hotels, the hospitality. It's really why it was such a great place to start out is like Disney, they're masters of storytelling. They create these characters and these stories that stay with people for their entire lives. And then specifically Imagineering is about bringing that like into space and into the design world. So, you know, it was definitely like crazy timing with starting there because I was there for maybe 2 or 3 months before the recession hit. So it was clear that like the, you know, the path was not going to be as predictable as I had originally thought.
What wound up happening?
It started getting a little, you know, stressful, dismal at the office. A lot of like layoffs and just hiring freeze. And I had been, since college, playing around with the intersection of food and design, food and architecture. I felt there was so much there to talk about, so much unexplored. And also just, you know, we eat with our eyes. Like, a huge part of how we kind of like take in food has to do with the presentation and the packaging. So I had thought, you know, I want to kind of play around with this idea. And this is a way to make architecture also more fun and accessible for people, because I felt like it was very intimidating, and I hate things that are intimidating. I think things that are cool should be more accessible, not less accessible. And so that had taken the form of like different like high concept dinner parties and different products, but it was really like an art project. And so when the recession hit at Imagineering, I started baking cookies, making ice cream, naming the combinations after architects. And it was really just a passionate hobby and something I was doing to lighten the mood. And I met Freya, really just, I'd been doing this for like 2 weeks. And she was like, so, you know, architecturally inspired ice cream sandwiches. Okay. She called them the elitist ice cream sandwiches, ironically, because my whole point was to be not elitist. I was like, yeah, it's kind of elitist, I guess. She was like, what's your cost per unit? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I went to Whole Foods. I spent $80. She was like, okay, we're going to go to Whole Foods and we're going to write down what everything costs. And then we're going to make like a, you know, little pro forma. I was like, oh, you know, like, yeah, I was like, but now I love that kind of stuff. Like, but it was so, it shows how lucky it is. Like one, like to have a co-founder and someone who could really have a complementary skill set, who could think about the things I wasn't thinking about. And frankly, who even thought of it as a business in the first place. Like I didn't really, that's when it became, I think, a business potential.
What was Freya doing at the time that she understood things like cost of goods?
She was in real estate development. She was actually project managing architect, so it was perfect. And she was also, she had been interested in getting into the food world. So she was moonlighting at a restaurant after work just to kind of learn the ropes. So she had been, you know, thinking that way as well. So it was like really just the happenstance of it all.
Tell us some of the first few combos and their names, because the names are...
Let's see, this, the original combos we had always had Mies Vanilla Roe, chocolate chip, Tahitian vanilla bean, and that is now 14% of our sales overall in groceries. So that's over like a couple million of our wholesale business is just that sandwich, which
in
is pretty Mies phenomenal.
Vanilla Roe.
Mies Vanilla Roe, yes. After the one of the Bauhaus founders.
Well,
he's Mies Van der Rohe, not Mies Vanilla Roe. So, you know, there's, let's see how this, check with the legal team on that. What's the reference? I don't know. There was Frank Berry, Snickerdoodle Strawberry, and Frank does know about it, has
Frank
booked
Geary.
Us multiple times, Frank Geary. He actually, one of the first events we ever did was going to his office. And one, I think, I know he's had the sandwich since then, but maybe at the time he was having lactose difficulties. So he was like, oh, lactose intolerant. I'm like, oh, can't have your sandwich. And he's also, he's tiny, you know, so he like couldn't quite see into the window of the truck. And he was like, he said something. He's like, oh, there was a huge line. His whole office came out to eat. And he's like, you're making a lot of money off us. And we're like, what does that mean? Like, does that mean like everyone's lining up? Or, you know, we pondered that for like days. We had Tom Mango after Tom Maine, which was our dairy-free at the time. He's booked us many times. And then Mintimalism after minimalist design.
Fun.
I think the last one was, which was not really a flavor we do much anymore, Oatmeal Cinnamoneo after Moneo. Yeah. So that was kind of like the original core. They're very classic. They're like reinvented classics. But it's interesting because we've become so much more, or part of like what people come to know us for is like the real unique flavors, the out of the box. But like we started with just elevating classics, which I think is also like, I'm really glad that that's a big part of it as well. You have to nail it on the classics.
What is your most popular flavor today? Is it the Mies?
Yeah, the Mies. The Mies is number one. We are introducing next year just a double chocolate cookie with Tahitian vanilla bean, because I think as far as the business model, like it's like you want to do the interesting stuff, and there's definitely always like a cult following for certain like very innovative flavors, but like you need more than one chocolate chip vanilla. You know, you need those like top SKUs. So I think double chocolate vanilla is going to be interesting just because it's like that's the classic, like when you think ice cream sandwich, like with like the wafer cookie, although this will not be a wafer cookie, but I think that's going to be up there as well. And then as far as pints, the street cart churro dough is quickly rising to number one. I did bring you guys, it's delicious, with brown butter and like a shattered chocolate, as we call it, swirled throughout. And then I would say close second, maybe like the cookie dough, the cookies and cream sandwich are really up there. Chocolate molten cake, which is gluten-free as a pint, really good.
You just mentioned gluten-free. Let's talk dairy-free, because that is such a big thing right now. When did you go into dairy-free? options?
We just launched our dairy-free line this
year. You just did. Okay.
It's actually vegan, but per the focus groups, vegan is scary for some people. And no, it's been a really, I think, incredible moment for the whole dairy alternative. And I think it's one that's, I think it's so cool, like as a brand known for dairy, because we really are still very much dairy first, but to be able to embrace dairy-free in the same way and to really innovate, because with a dairy flavor, there's so much creativity that's possible, but you have milk, cream, sugar, you have kind of like a huge core of the product that's already set in stone. Dairy-free, it was like a complete blank canvas. Like, what's it even going to be made of? We looked at the market. We saw a lot of coconut. We saw a lot of cashew, which some of them are great, but we definitely saw that like that's dominating. I feel that a lot of coconut flavors taste like coconut after.
Because they
do. It's wrong. Yeah, they do. And, you know, some people might love that. Mm-hmm. Cashew, you lose the nut people, and it is sometimes a textural issue. So we found peas, and we thought it's a really clean, like, kind of sourcing. A lot of it's domestic or Canadian.
Had pea milk.
I love pea milk. Yeah. Ripple, I think, is fantastic. Mm-hmm. That was definitely an inspiration. It delivers kind of more protein. It's like a more effective way to get the plant protein. It's just a really interesting, versatile product. So we end up going peas, brown rice, cocoa butter is the base.
Oh, interesting.
Of the dairy-free.
Yeah. I love the whole dairy-free trend. Yeah. I mean, knock on wood, I'm fine with dairy. But at the end of the day, ice cream is all about making people happy. And the fact that there are people excluded from that, it's so nice now that it's just opened up ice
Someone
cream to everybody.
At Smith Canteen, I was like, oh, I brought samples and there should be enough for you guys as well. She's like, oh no, I don't have dairy. I was like, it's so nice to be able to be like, I have something for you. And I completely stand by it on the quality level of the dairy. And that's something that was a non-negotiable for us when we were doing this. It was like, this cannot be a compromise.
No, and I think today you can just kind of go back and forth.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's
whichever.
I call myself flexitarian. I'll just, whatever's good, you know, and
exactly.
that's what I want to do. I was like, this has to be, you know, that's what this has to be for the people who are lactose intolerant, for people who are vegan, or for mm-hmm. people who just love delicious things. I hope that, I think a lot of like dairy consumers are opening themselves up. So it's a really exciting time to like, I'm glad. And it's pioneering still. Like, we're at the very, it may
totally.
Feel for those of us like in LA and in New York, like, oh, this has been like, it's, we're like at the forefront, you know?
It's amazing to me how the ice cream category has exploded.
Yeah. Oh my God.
What is behind that?
Okay. I think that definitely awareness of a better quality product being possible has changed a lot. And that's happened cross category. Like so many, you could almost go product by product and like so many different like things have been elevated in terms of how they're made, how they're sourced, what's behind them, just also being more personal brands with the people behind them.
You mean just brands in general?
I think, yes.
Everything's kind of been elevated.
Yes. The actual ice cream category, if you look at like the big, big numbers, it, you know, it goes up a few percentage, it goes down, but it's just like, what are people buying within that space? Are they choosing to buy something better?
But why ice cream? Like, it's such a tough category to get into. It's such a perishable product.
It is the most perishable product probably you could be in. I think I would be shocked for someone to find a category that isn't really tough. You know, like, you could be,
magazines
I want to
so
make,
easy.
right, exactly. Like anything's hard. I think like, oh, like beverages, like, yeah, like there's people consume them a lot more, but then it's way more crowded and it costs a lot more to get into that space. You know, other kinds of snacking, other kinds of like you could go really to anything and you would find your difficulties with it. So I would say there's probably maybe less people overall who attempt ice cream. And that's why like it is a small world. Like you all kind of know each other. I think you keep getting to certain thresholds too, where it's smaller and smaller. My friend Jane Werwand, who does Dermalogica, or who's the founder and the who created that brand, she's amazing. And she says, and she's like a way better accent. So it sounds better with her like British accent, but she says, it's very crowded at the bottom and it's very quiet at the top. And it's true. So like the farther you go along, you're like, oh, like there's actually really only a handful of brands who are nationally distributed, who have the capability to keep scaling, who have the potential to be that household brand, or maybe there'll be, you know, several. And you're like, oh my God, like we could really do this. Like we could go all the way. So yeah, it's like really, really fucking hard, but show me something that isn't.
So that begs the question, have you met Ben or Jerry yet?
I haven't met them. I've spoken with a good number of Unilever folks, and I've found many of them to be so, so lovely. I actually have not met them. That's a really, that would be a good one. I would love to get to know them. And I've heard, you know, great things about how they still stay involved in the brand.
Have you met Hagen or Dawes?
Anyone really behind them? I mean,
no, I think they made that name up.
Right. No, they definitely did. I think it's from Jersey. But like, they're really interesting to me because they represent, like, there's nobody, like, people don't really know anyone who's behind that brand. There's no face. There's not really a story besides, like, the quality element of the ice cream. And I think that it's interesting. Like, Ben and Jerry's was one of the first, like, really more personal brands where we're like, it's them and their counterculture, and they represent something. Häagen-Dazs to me is the sleeper giant in the category because they're still like really widely consumed. I think their quality has actually maintained pretty well considering their size.
I'm gonna go on record, I think their vanilla is dynamite.
It's really good. Although I will say, because we did this as like a tasting, a blind, like try it next to Cool House Station vanilla pint, and I just gotta say, I mean, I always thought Häagen-Dazs was so good, and I hadn't like really done the comparison recently, and I do feel very proud of our vanilla.
Love a blind taste test.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's so much fun. But I think people don't see going after Häagen-Dazs in the same way because I think it's not as like cool. They don't have that like brand element.
Right. That's so interesting.
But like I see Cool House kind of in a way as like a love child of Häagen-Dazs and Ben & Jerry's. Like we have kind of that like edgy kind of that story, the counterculture of our generation. But then the texture, we're going more for like a Häagen-Dazs. The simplicity, the classic flavors elevated. Häagen-Dazs' number one SKU is their bar. And so they're big in the novelty world, which Ben & Jerry's has really not done nearly as much of. Going at like Häagen-Dazs, like that's kind of our strategy in some ways that I think is like a different take on things.
It is such an interesting brand to look at because there really is no story behind it.
No.
And they've succeeded despite that.
Yeah. They were already so big by the time. Would that be effective now if they were to start? Yeah. I don't think
so.
That's
a great question.
Yeah.
And then I feel like Ben & Jerry's was one of the first brands I can think of. I'm sure there are others. But that was values first.
Totally.
And that they weren't afraid to put their values out there.
100%.
Yeah. One thing I really would love to know about you is how you have developed as a business owner, as an executive over the years, because you did not start out aspiring to be a small business owner.
Yeah.
How have you learned what you've learned over the years? You definitely radiate confident, competent executive.
I appreciate
how have you gotten
that.
To that point?
Maybe it's
seating posture.
Well, one, you have to be willing to embrace change and grow a ton if you want to, you know, found a company, be a CEO. Like you're always kind of growing, always evolving. And if that doesn't excite you, I think then, you know, maybe you're in the wrong game. I think you have to have a lot of conviction. You do have to have a lot of confidence, vision. There are certain things that are, you know, either just inherent or you really have got to get in touch with kind of like on that like deeper level that are not necessarily, you know, the learned skills in the same way, but something that can really like inspire people to even get behind what you want to do. And I think that energy is really important, really powerful. And I realize now looking back, like you almost kind of want to bottle that because there's such a magic to the beginning, even though in a way you know nothing. And then I think you start to kind of like acquire your skill set. And like I said, you have to just be willing to evolve all the time. Hopefully you can be around a team or around a product that like helps with that. And you're learning from each other and you're bringing different skills to the table. Like I'll say for me, like in the beginning, I was kind of like, oh, Natasha's like the creative and sales and Freya's like the business one, which I always like frustrates me. I really don't like getting put in that box. And I also think for creatives, like you can't be like, oh, I'm just going to find someone to do the numbers. Like you have to at least understand what's going on and then maybe hire someone so that you don't get taken advantage of. It's funny because now if people think of me and Freya, they're like, oh, Freya's like, you know, an ideas person and Natasha, like she gets the job done. I'm like, oh, it's so awesome. We've like kind of like absorbed these different things from each other. And it shows how much I think you can change and grow. I think, you know, over the years, I just came to really know and understand business and really become passionate about it, become passionate about the different elements of what makes it all work. Because I think that is what a business is. You know, this isn't a homework assignment. This isn't an art project. Like it has to work. And that's the beauty of the creativity. Like it almost to me, sometimes I think it takes more creativity when it has to be applied and when it has to function than when it can just kind of exist, you know, in a vacuum. like I've come to just really enjoy that. And then now, you know, we're 10 years in, we've grown quite a bit. We are building our team with some phenomenal people. I have a new partner, president of the company, Denise Saravatka, who has like a couple decades of experience in CPG, a little more. She helped grow Udi's from 500,000 to 100 million in just a few years. Like, she's amazing. What I'm learning so much from her. She's just like blown my mind every day. And I think with a partner like that, like, in a way you kind of come back to the specialization. Like, okay, well, now that you have the team and you feel like really sure of like all that they can do, now I can really dig into the product development, the innovation, the branding, the marketing. And you want to be spending all your time on what you really feel like you can contribute the most. So it's kind of a full circle.
Let's talk fundraising, because that's something that is of big interest to our listeners.
Great. I love that.
So you self-funded at the beginning. You pulled together that $2,500.
Yeah.
Short version. Tell us the steps that it took to get where you are today.
Yes, the credit card. So it was like, I used to be like, oh, we started with $2,500 or $5,000, let's say. No, it was actually debt. It was money we didn't have. So no money, just debt. And then we started cash flowing right away because we spent nothing launching. And then the next round was like a friends and family. We needed about $40,000. So it's tiny because...
Wait, that's like nothing.
Yeah.
I don't mean that sounds like nothing, because I know for a lot of you out there listening, you're like, what do you mean $40,000 is like make or break for me? But you need so much more than that.
Right. Well, it was just because basically we had the illegal truck that I had to go to court, and then it was amazing. It was the People versus Natasha case. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. It sounds like a movie
and they're
title.
Like, yeah, totally. So they were like, you need to build a proper truck. And so the $40,000 was to build a real truck that was permittable and a little extra change. But yeah, tiny amount.
But you said you had cash flow. So you did have some other money coming
in. Yes, but not enough. Enough to run the business, but not enough to build this new truck that was like.
Because I'm thinking salaries, the truck, ingredients.
Yes.
Like $40,000 doesn't seem like it's going to cut it.
Right. Right. Exactly. So because the business was functioning from like the major operating costs, like it was basically working. Okay. So then we needed more trucks because we weren't keeping up with the demand in LA and we wanted to launch in New York. So I found this organization called Opportunity Fund, and they're amazing. And I'm really excited for your listeners to hear about them. They're now become the nation's biggest micro lender. They're the number one lender to food trucks because the truck is the asset that they can help you borrow against, and they can do it pretty quickly. But they lend from like people who like are selling something like goods on like a street corner who need $1,000, let's say, to keep their business going. Now all the way up, I think the biggest loan they do is $250,000. And that was such an important like catalyst moment. I think if we couldn't keep scaling, that would have been a glass ceiling for us.
And did you just apply with the Opportunity Fund online?
Yeah, you can. Yes, you can apply online, or I'm happy to connect anyone who's interested to, and I'm now on the board.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm their poster child.
Okay.
Yeah. Southern California board. So that was amazing. And then the next round.
And asking for a friend, are they like low rate loans?
They
like,
are. They're very fair. Basically they're serving the market in between. Like, it's so hard to go and get like a line of credit, real small business loans still. And they're kind of the anti-payday lender. So they're really filling that void of like where the bigger banks just can't really help. So it's pretty similar rates depending on the size of the loan. Very, very fair, very good payback rate. And also they are like amazing people who actually like care about the people that they give the loans to. It's not just like, here's a check, goodbye. Like, they promote so many of the companies that they work with. So they're really, really cool. Okay, so then we're like running the trucks. Now we're 2 years in. And we said, you know, the truck business is... it's amazing. It's very magical. It's this cool boutique element, but it didn't really have the scaling potential we could see. And we wanted to revisit the two channels that we really couldn't afford or understand in the beginning, which was grocery and scoop shops. And then we're like, okay, we're really going to need more money now. And so then we did an angel round of $1 million to really do those two things.
What does angel round mean?
So an angel is typically like non-institutional money. So it could be like a high net worth individual. You know, oftentimes it can be, now there are like angel networks, but it could be like someone kind of in your warm community that you may know of. So it's like there's maybe some personal connection, but they're not like someone that you like see in every holiday very often. And in this case, the $1 million came from Bobby Margolis, who, for those children of the 90s, did Cherokee Jeans and was just like a titan of business. So he was amazing because it wasn't just money. It was him as a mentor and a coach. And he was very much came out of the counterculture kind of Ben and Jerry's era. So I think he like kind of saw us as like, you know, seeing himself in the business in that way. And his son-in-law became president of our company. And his daughter was an amazing like celebrity PR agency. So it was like a super, that is something I can't emphasize enough. Like it was really smart money. Bobby really wanted us to focus on grocery and saw the scalability there and saw the potential to exit. So we really started kind of like pivoting more to focusing on that and building that. And that $1 million lasted us basically 7 years. Yeah. So because we grew the business, maybe not as quickly as it could have for a few years in there, but profitably and very responsibly. And so we didn't need to constantly take in money as we were growing. Then came, you know, 2017, 2018, and we've now done a pretty substantial strategic private equity round. It was technically $12 million, but really more seven for, you know, growing the business. So it was pretty substantial for us. But it was good, like, because we had kind of waited it out. Both Fran and myself are pretty, like, heavily equity invested, and I think it was just really, really good timing. And they have brought so much to the table. Again, going through due diligence with them, which is the process when they're really checking out like all your financials and your team and the plan. Even if the deal hadn't worked out, I learned so much from going through that with them. I was like, I know that this is going to be, you know, meaningful. And a lot of them have been operators and have really been there. So I think that that is has been meaningful for us as well. And
do you wish you had raised that money earlier?
No, I think it's actually was just the right time, mm-hmm. honestly. But it had to happen then. Yeah. Like we couldn't wait any longer.
I only ask because I had heard a venture capitalist speaking and he or she said, women bring me fully built out businesses. Men bring me ideas.
Yeah, that is true. I think a lot more women think they have to like prove it and earn it. And men sort of more often think they deserve it, or they take a better stance that like someone should be so lucky to invest in their business. And I think probably the answer lies somewhere in between.
So what's next?
So we,
you're a mama.
Yeah, I'm a mom. I have a 2-year-old son, Remy, and that's been phenomenal. It's been actually like, I think when you love what you do and you have a kid, like it just makes you feel more passionate because you're kind of doing it for them.
And a mom who does ice cream. What's cooler than that when you're a little kid?
He loves ice cream. Oh, let me tell you. He knows, sees the packaging and he just like goes bananas. And we are working on growing our family again. So I'll keep you posted on that. We're building the team. We've added a couple of really great players to the team who I'm really excited about in operations and marketing. We have a ton of innovation in the works. We are working on a multi-pack. We are working on bite size, like a bonbon, elevate the bonbon, reinvent the Choco Taco. It was so much cool stuff. I'm super excited.
I've been able to tell throughout this interview, you're super psyched about novelty. You've mentioned novelty a few times.
Yes.
But that's what we loved as kids, you know?
Totally. It's such a different thing.
The Chipwich.
Yes,
all
exactly.
The good humor stuff.
It's
and the good humor. Good humor, if you're listening, I don't know, hire Natasha to like come redo your brand because you've let your standards slip big time. I mean, have you had one of those? I grew up loving those chocolate eclair bars.
Right.
You get one of those now from like the local bodega or whatever. They're so sad now.
That's not trying to, you know, just rag on, for example, Choco Taco. But even that, people could still consider it yummy. But if you actually taste the ice cream, it's just air. It's just
I think when you look
cream.
At the ingredients, it's not ice cream.
It's not ice cream. And even if it could have good ingredients, the amount of air in it is like it's not dense. It's not creamy. Yeah. Like because really that is like a huge, huge element of what makes ice cream good.
I mean, I appreciate them trying to have an affordable product. But
sure.
Do they have to sacrifice quality that much?
Exactly. And there's definitely a market that's been proved for okay, you could definitely take things a major notch up and make it great. And I think that's the thing. I think Cool House, what's interesting too, is as I mentioned, to tell it like it is as far as like the premium ice cream landscape, for example, like some of our competitors, they are $2 and $3 more than us. Like we are part of what we're trying to do is like really have incredible quality, but really keep it like our blended average of a pint, I think is like $5.69. Like we're trying to be as fair as we can about that because we also don't want to miss a huge part of the market that's going to say, well, I want the great ice cream too, but I'm not going to buy a $9 pint.
Right.
So that's definitely a consideration. But we looked at Choco Taco and it's like a multi-million-dollar SKU over, let's say, like the last few months or something. And it's like that one flavor, there's been no reinvention and the quality is not there. So I think you kind of see opportunity and novelty is like, that's such a specialization for Cool House. Like nobody is really able to play in that space. I think the way we are, because it is like a whole different set of development. So
we started as like super classy novelty.
That's it. Yeah. The elitist.
All right. Speed round time.
Yes.
Favorite kitchen tool.
I guess like the teapot because I just love to make my matcha.
Song that makes you smile.
You know, I've been really into Kurt Vile. And like, I feel like that it's just like chill, happy music.
Last thing you cooked.
Let's see. Greens from the garden. Chard. Yeah. Chard, yes. Kale. We have so many great things growing right now. Yeah.
Ooh, I'm impressed. Yeah. Okay. Favorite ingredient to cook with?
Can I say to make a drink with? Does that count as cooking?
I love it.
I love Antica, Carpano Antica Vermouth is, I think, so, so good. The sweet vermouth.
Wait, say that again, slowly.
It's Carpano Antica or Antica Carpano. It's like if you love a good Manhattan, if you love a Negroni, if you love anything with like the sweet vermouth, it just makes it so, so, so much better.
Good tip. Oldest thing in your fridge.
We have so many like pickled things. I'm sure one of them is like been around for since we moved into the house 4 years ago. Some of that kimchi or...
It's better with age, right?
Yeah, right.
Dream vacation destination.
Well, I'm dying already to go back to Tokyo and Japan. I'd love to go to Thailand. Really, really curious about Thailand. I would say Thailand or India at this point.
If you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be?
Oh, wow, that's an amazing one. These are great questions. I love it.
Thanks, Natasha.
Am I allowed to say, have you seen like the Amy Sedaris, her cooking show? Because mm-hmm. I know like the show obviously like, makes fun of it, but I know she's actually like pretty passionate, like at home entertaining. I feel like she would be great because like we could really talk about food, but she would just be so funny and we could go off on many other topics. So yeah, I think I would pick her.
I feel like we should have a bell that goes off when someone gets picked for the first time. You are the first oh. person to pick Amy Sedaris. We love her.
She's kind of outside the box, you know, as far as the
totally.
Food.
But like, you would spend the whole time laughing.
Yeah.
And you might starve to death and not even realize it because right. you'd be laughing so hard.
Right. We would not be making any recipes from her show.
I hope
probably
not.
Die.
No, we love her. We actually tried to get her for Jubilee. Amy, if you're listening, we love you.
Yeah, she's amazing.
We want to get her for the show too. One day. One day. Thank you for coming by again.
Of course.
Now that we know your office is in the hood, hopefully we'll see you more.
Fantastic. All I would right. love that. Thanks for having me.
Have a great summer.
You too.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Natasha for stopping by and bringing us some great treats. If you haven't tried Cool House ice cream, well, you gotta. Treat yourself and support a kick-ass female-fueled business in the process. Thank you to our sponsor, Hanson Brook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs, for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. You folks are excellent. Our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra La La. Our show is edited, engineered, and produced by Jess Seidman. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Media. If you listen to our show via Apple Podcasts, be sure to subscribe. If you are a Stitcher kind of gal, make sure to add us to your playlists. You don't want to miss a single episode. Thanks to everyone for listening. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, my name is Madison Trapkin, and I'm the founder of Girl Squash, a women's food, culture, and art publication based in Boston, Massachusetts. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? All the other women making indie food publications, like Emily and Anna Kochman of Milky Mag, Jaya and Jesse Nicely of Compound Butter, and of course, Sarah Keough of Put a Egg on It. Because these women inspire me to keep fighting for small print and to keep pushing for activism through food and art.